Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you're exactly where you need to be. I am your host, Rick Hale, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, Karen will not be joining us. She's not feeling well. She has a very bad headache. So if we can, give, some, good thoughts out to her so Karen gets better, because the show is not the show without her. So tonight is going to be our Halloween edition of Paranormal Underground Radio, and we actually have two guests for you tonight. Now, joining us for the first hour is going to be Mariah Delacroix. She is a sensitive intuitive, spirit and animal empath, and she is also author of Restless in Peace, A Psychic Mortician's Encounters with Those Who Won't Rest. So, Mariah Delacroix, welcome to the Underground.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So, we were talking a little bit before the start of the show. I did read your book, and I did enjoy it, and I found, the stories very compelling, and some, a few of them very touching. But first, what I want to do is, before we get to the book, I want to talk a little bit about Mariah. Now, one of the things that I did find interesting about your book is the introduction. Yeah, I am one of those very few people that actually read the introduction to a book.
Well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, you know what? Not only do I read the introduction to books, but I also will stay and watch all the credits, because I think that those people deserve the credit that they get, which is why they call it the closing credits. But now, you call yourself a sensitive intuitive. Now, I find that very interesting, because a lot of people, they don't have problems with calling themselves psychic medium. I work with a few psychic mediums that I, really respect and like, and are part of my family, extended part of my families. But your story is very interesting with your psychic ability. You came across it at an extremely young age. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I've been sensitive to spirits ever since I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I call it that I had an awakening at about 6 months of age. And even when I was in my high chair as a child and could just barely walk, couldn't talk yet, as is normal with children,
sure.
I remember vividly sitting in that high chair, one of those old-fashioned ones that they outlaw today,
mm-hmm.
with the chrome legs and the plastic seats and the clips on the side that kids could get their fingers caught in. And
oh,
I was sitting in it trying to get my father's attention when he was making oatmeal one morning. And Mom hadn't gotten up yet, and I was trying, but the unseen hands picked up my high chair and carried it across the kitchen and sat it behind my father, just close enough where I could touch him.
Okay.
And when I touched him, his gut reaction was to react rather quickly. He had been a fighting CB in World War II.
And oh, impressive.
So he definitely reacted, but then he just kind of laughed and gave me that big, gorgeous smile he used to have. And but he was looking around the room as if he was looking at someone else, when the only two people that were in the room were he and I. And
right.
Then he let me know that the oatmeal was fine, and the thing I didn't like in the oatmeal was butter. I couldn't stand and still can't stand the smell of butter, but he was making some oatmeal for me special.
Mm-hmm.
And moved me back to my spot, and then kept nodding and looking at other people in the room. So he could also sense and communicate with spirits, as could my mother.
See, now I find that really interesting. And, as a person that considers herself a psychical researcher, I put a lot of emphasis on psychic abilities. And it's really interesting that a lot of people say that, because it does seem that these kind of abilities do run in families. And I just want to get, what your thoughts on it. Do you think that there is, because this is something that seems to run in families, do you think that there is, a biological component to this that makes you a little bit more aware of energy that's around you?
I think so. the fact that a child can say to their parents that they have been talking with somebody, and the parents won't say, well, that's just your imaginary friend. My family sure. was, yes, you can do this, but we can't tell other people that we do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep it to yourself. And yeah. then, of course, as I grew older, other people would let me know, no, you don't have a friend, and that type of thing. So that began to quell it. That began to hide it, so to speak.
Sure. What I find really interesting about your story, about your awakening, is that such an incredibly young age. I can't remember what I had for dinner last night, but do you remember something that you did, that happened to you when you were 6 months old? I find that amazing. Do you think that that has something to do with that with your ability?
I really don't know. I remember feeling as if I didn't know what this body was that I was in.
Sure.
It didn't work for me. It didn't cooperate. The muscles didn't do what I wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that it was because I of a reincarnation type of thing where I still held the residual memory of the last life where I was older.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like trying to fit on a pair of pants or something that just didn't quite fit.
Yeah.
And getting used to it and then becoming maturing in that body.
Right. Yeah, that's another thing too that I oftentimes hear from people who have a psi ability, that it's like they feel very strongly that they've been here before. And as a Buddhist, I very much believe in you know, reincarnation. It's a tenet of our belief system. But with psychics, it seems to be special. Like I said, a lot of them that I talk to are like, I remember distinctly what I was before. And I find that incredibly compelling that we have, you know, that you're able to remember that kind of thing. I'm really sorry, Mariah. I have a couple of spirits in my basement, and one of them is trying to kind of like manifest itself right now. So it's like I keep seeing like this flashing white light out of the corner of my eye in the hall. So sorry about that. Every now and then he likes
a little distracting sometimes. Yes.
Yeah, he likes to mess with me when I'm down here, so it's like sometimes he does crazy stuff like that. But it kind of looks like there's a hand waving there, like around the corner.
Well, just so, wave back and say, Charlie, you know, I'll talk to you later, honey.
So, okay, now you progress in your ability and you come into a very interesting profession, one that you would think that an intuitive or a sensitive or a psychic wouldn't be involved in, a mortician. How did you come about being in a field like that?
I was, I had my own business for 23 years, taking care of people's homes,
mm-hmm.
in a very personal manner that was exactly what they needed. It wasn't a cookie cutter style of, come in, make the beds, change the sheets, you know, that type of thing. It was
sure.
what they needed. And many times when I went into their homes, I knew what they needed before they did. So I was honing my empathic abilities, if you want to put them that way,
mm-hmm.
with the many, many people that I worked for. And along the 23 years, I encountered some spirits in their house, and they would come up to me and say, Mariah, did you see something? Did you hear
mm-hmm.
something? And I would go, yeah. And in one particular home, we had a woman who would appear in the living room of the house. And it was always just before the phone would ring, and the lady of the house that lived there would get a call that someone in her family had passed.
Okay.
And so we learned how to deal with the spirits and accept them in those different homes. And when
sure.
the economy went on a downturn, I wanted to go into something where I could get an education, get my degree, get my licenses, and incorporate everything that I had learned, including using some things that I had learned from the medical field that I had been in prior to taking
okay.
care of houses. And a friend of mine was going to attend the local mortuary school, and I didn't even know we had one. And
okay.
I called the head of the department and talked to him about it. And within 45 minutes of chatting with him on the phone, I was hooked. And the rest is history.
Yeah, it's, I just think it's definitely one of those more interesting. I'm just dealing with that kind of thing, that it is, you know, you get a body come in, does they just sort of like pop up and look at you and say, Mariah, how you doing? I have a story to tell. How does that work? Do they, you know, reveal themselves to you like that, and, you know, in a more subtle or in a more adventurous fashion?
To tell you the truth, when I went into the profession, I didn't think that spirits would hang around in mortuaries or cemeteries or crematories, because who would want to? It's
sure.
depressing.
Right.
I found out otherwise. That they do hang around there. Some hang around the caskets. Some are in the embalming room when they're taken care of. Mm-hmm. Some will help at different times. But I did try to shut off a lot of that. But after a while, I just went, okay, I'm just going to go with it. I'm just going to roll with it. They've got a message for me. They have a purpose for me to be immersed in this right now.
Right.
And, for instance, the first... very first encounter, which isn't in the book.
Okay.
One of the first or second, about the second or third night that I was alone in the funeral home, I was doing paperwork and just engrossed in it to the point I wanted to make sure all my T's were crossed, all my I's were dotted, everything was filed right. You know mm-hmm. how you get when you get into paperwork and you just don't want to get distracted out of it.
Sure.
And because... most funeral homes are like labyrinths. I got lost.
Okay.
And I heard a voice saying, Mariah, take a right here, take a left here. And I was like, oh, thank you, you know. And then as I was walking into the office where I needed to file all these paperwork, I heard someone say thank you. And that's when it hit me. Mariah, you're alone. And I turned around and looked down the darkened hallway, and there was a glowing spirit standing, hovering, what have you, at the end of the hallway, and he nodded at me like, you're very welcome, and moved off. And I went, okay, gotcha. Okay, I'm not alone.
Yeah, see, and it's stories like this that are so refreshing because, let's face it, you know, in the paranormal field here in the 21st century, everybody just focuses on frightening, scary. But, you know, going into your book, some of the stories are very sweet. The one that I really want to focus on that I really enjoyed was the very first chapter, and that was The Doorman.
Mm-hmm.
How did I believe in the story you said that you were fairly new to this a mortuarium? Is that what you would call it?
Being a mortician, and I used
being a mortician.
Yeah, someone has commented to me in an email today that it was kind of an antiquated term. I like the term. That's why I use it.
Okay.
And also, I'm not a fully licensed funeral director.
Okay.
And without being fully licensed, I can't claim to legally be a fully licensed funeral director. A licensed embalmer, yes. And a licensed cremationist, yes. But so I stuck with mortician.
Okay.
And plus, everybody can relate to that word.
Yeah. Well, what's the more, I guess you could say, politically correct term for mortician?
Once somebody is fully licensed, a funeral director.
And okay.
That's an honored term, and believe me, they've gone through a lot to earn that.
No, I don't doubt that. It's funny because I actually was talking to one of the funeral directors when my aunt passed away, and. He went through a lot of education, and it was in his family business. They were just like this old, you know, Chicago Irish family, and they'd, you know, been running, you know, morticians for years and years and years. So, you know, not only did he learn the field from his dad and his grandfather before him, but, you know, he also, you know, went through a lot of education, and he was definitely a doctor to the dead, I'll tell you that much.
Yes, and
yeah.
Sometimes we are known as, because we're embalmers, basically we are post-mortem vascular surgeons.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Some of us joke in the profession that basically an embalmer is a post-mortem vascular surgeon. And that's, it's kind of like, I don't want to work on somebody living with what we have to do. I don't want to do that.
Right, right. So, you know, with the doorman, I thought it was a very interesting, and I thought it was a very, you know, very compelling story and very sweet. So, what was, I'm sorry, I can't seem to remember, what was the name of the of where you were working at the time?
The name I use for that funeral home is Serenity Shores.
Serenity Shores, that's it. I was thinking Serenity Now from Seinfeld. But yeah. So how long were you working there before you realized that this spirit was trying to make contact with you? And how did he go about doing it?
Oh, it wasn't even a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I had been working there. He kept shutting the door on me. I would go into the that room, the storage room, that also contained the cooler, and the door would just begin to shut, and it was a heavy door. It was a fire door.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, how is this door shutting? Oh, and it had one of those blocks on the bottom that you kick out, those little arms that can hold the door back, but it would be up for some reason. And it would just start to shut, and sometimes the lights would dim in there, and it gave you that general creepy, weird feeling.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that just working in a place like that would be the creepy, weird feeling in and of itself, but definitely having a spirit around would definitely give it that little bit of that extra bit of creep factor. Now, were you the only person that was experiencing this spirit? Was he trying to make himself aware to others?
He would at different times, and other people would just ignore it or actually tell me, Mariah, just forget about it. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. I'm not going to, so don't you either.
Yeah, you were talking about the older woman who worked in the place, that she seemed to be very, very aware that something of this nature was occurring, correct?
Mm-hmm. She was aware of it, and she really didn't want to deal with it. It was just, don't talk to me about it. It freaks me out. It scares me, so let's just forget about it.
Stick your head in the sand, yeah. Definitely. So, now, you call him the doorman. Now, according to the story, it's not just because he was opening and closing the door on you, correct?
Correct.
So,
I would sit there and ask him questions, and like I said, if it was a no, the door would stay open. If it was a yes, the door would close.
Right.
And I just asked him, you're taking care of a door. Were you a doorman in life? And the door closed.
Okay.
So that's how we communicated.
So,
the yes and no type thing of opening, either leaving the door open or closing it.
Right. You know, and I think that's interesting because most people, they go with the old, shave and a haircut, two bits kind of thing, or the one knock for yes and two for no. Now, a lot of people would find this story kind of questionable because you have some people in the field who would be like, it's a heavy door. There's just no way possible that that a spirit could close such an incredibly heavy door. I'm sure that, you know, after your experience, that you would disagree, correct?
Yeah, I would disagree because they can move things depending upon how much they want to.
Right.
They have free will to absorb energy or do whatever they need to in whatever way they need to do it.
Yeah. Well, coming from a guy that's been shoved on his butt and punched in the head by something that was invisible, I can definitely attest to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but it seemed that there was a lot more going on with the doorman rather than just opening and closing doors. It would appear that he had, you know, some kind of a message. But before we get to the message, let's talk. Were you able to find out, besides being just a doorman, were you able to find out any more of the history on this particular spirit?
Other than he had worked as a doorman at a very fashionable hotel in the area when that hotel was up and running.
Okay. So
that was about it, and the fact that I guess he died about in the 70s. So
that was actually going to be my next question.
Mm-hmm. He had died quite. He had left his wife accidentally quite a few years earlier.
Oh, okay. Now he was waiting for her, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was waiting for his lady love to come through.
See, and I think that's sweet. I mean, it's almost unthinkable to think that, you know, like, I'm a married guy and I love my wife, and we were talking a little bit about that before, and it's like, we were on vacation and we were having that conversation, and she was like, well, we need to have this conversation because we need to know what to do with our son, Theo. And it's like, I can't talk about that kind of stuff without breaking out in tears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just so sad, but I know it's like, it's a very real conversation that, you know, you have to have. But did his wife ever come through? Did, you know, did she ever pass away and come through?
After I left, an associate, as I talk about in the story, an associate did call me,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
she let me know what had happened. And the night before she had called me, I had a dream of a gentleman in a doorman's outfit and a lady who was very elegant looking, very beautiful, walking hand in hand, and walking away from me like on a cloud type vision thingy, and turning around and looking at me in the dream and just kind of waving bye-bye like, we're off now.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I received a phone call from my friend that said that certain things had happened in the funeral home that night.
I just think that's a really beautiful story. And like I said, oftentimes in this field right now, everybody wants to hear, you know, to be afraid. But, you know, those of us who have been in the field for a long time know that it's like, you're going to really honestly deal more with, you know, Aunt Mabel trying to say hi rather than some, you know, demon that wants to eat your soul and drag you straight to hell.
That's right.
You're not going to really deal with that kind of thing that much. You know, it doesn't happen, you know, every week. There's another interesting thing that I find about you that I thought was interesting is an animal empath. Now, a lot of people would look and they'd be like, oh, she's an animal psychic. That's really strange. But can you explain to us a little bit about what an animal empath is and does?
Well, I use the energy of animals to be able to guide people as totem energies.
Okay.
I do some readings for people where the energy of animals comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy from that animal kind of indicates what's going to happen for them and how they need to look at things over the next week or so.
Okay. Now, when you contact these energies, these animals, do they speak to you with an audible voice, or is it just something that's primarily telepathic?
It could be telepathic. I feel it more, so I call it empathic.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, you know, there's the times that I want to apologize to my dog. We used to have a Jack Russell Terrier, and shortly after my son was born, she bit him. And so we had to, you know, do the unfortunate part because it wasn't going to get any better. It was just getting worse. I always kind of wanted to apologize to her. I always felt bad about that. But do you come across that kind of thing? Because recently, a friend that I, a real close friend of mine, she's a psychic medium. I talk about her quite a bit on the show, Nancy Laporta. And she was doing readings in our house, and she did a reading for my wife's parents. And my father-in-law, they had a dog. Her name was Munchie. She was just like this weird, freakish, mutant dog. I don't even remember what breeds they were, but she was cute. She was just weird and freakish, you know? But it's like the dog was never with her dad, but the dog was always with her mom because mm-hmm. her mom was the one that was like, we got to put her down, you know, bummer. But do you find that, you know, that animal spirits stick around? Do you think that they blame people for what it is that they did to them?
I don't feel that they blame people for what has to be done when that comes along because they understand mm-hmm. that we're doing it to take them out of misery. I did animal rehab for about 20 years. mm-hmm. With several licensed rehabilitators, and I specialized in bird rehab. And if you probably can hear some of my birds in the background.
Actually, I couldn't. Okay.
But in some cases, there were birds that you could just feel they didn't want to be put down, mm-hmm. even though they were very broken and very sick. And so my associates and I would work on the bird and bring it back to health, and often we were able to release it back into the wild as it was supposed to have been done.
Sure.
Some of them weren't able to be released, and some did have to be put down eventually. But, you know, we could feel it.
Yeah.
And animal spirits do come back. Every time one of my birds does pass away, usually within 24 to 48 hours, we'll see it flying through the house. It's kind of like a bye, Mom, heading home. Yeah. And a few weeks ago, I was sitting right here, and the kitchen chair moved. And I have an Afghan on that kitchen chair.
Okay.
And there was none of my cats, none of my dogs were around this kitchen chair. But the Afghan was sticking up as it used to when a dog that I had, a Sheltie, passed away, and he would stand under it. He liked to play peekaboo. And about 2 days later, the other dog that I have that used to play with the Sheltie, and he always played with him in a certain way. He's never played with anybody else like that.
Okay.
Was chasing around the table and started playing with the chair moving again as if he was playing with the Sheltie. And so I know that they do come around.
Mm-hmm. Now, do animal spirits, do they, you know, will they haunt a location? Like, there's been a couple times where in my house I thought that I saw, like, this, something that would look like a black cat walking around the bathroom area. And I mean, do they haunt, or can they haunt? Are they like human spirits?
I think they can come back. Yes, they can.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely. I have been told by some people that things that aren't so nice will try to appear to us as children, as well as animals, to appeal to our kinder side,
mm-hmm.
our weaker side. And fortunately, I've been able to put a block up against that type of thing, so that when I do sense or see something like that, I can let it know, I know you're lying. I know you're not who you say you are. So either out or give me a message and show who you are.
Yeah. Now, when you say that these are not so nice things, I don't really believe in demons. It's not part of my belief system, but I know a lot of people do. These things that present themselves as animals or children, do you consider them to be demonic spirits?
Not too often. I'm not one to really pull the demon card quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not one to jump on that bandwagon. I'm really not. In my opinion, people who say it's all demonic and that type of thing, I'm going, oh boy. Okay,
yeah.
Just keep talking. but maybe it's someone that's angry. Maybe it's an elemental. Maybe it's an energy that is collective and mm-hmm. is trying to form something so that we notice what it is. But I just deal with it on a case-by-case basis, just like with human beings. You have to deal with every person you meet on a case-by-case basis. And with spirits, it's the same thing. They're each as individual and unique as every living person.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you work with the paranormal team?
No, I don't.
No, but do you do private readings in homes and?
I do private readings through my website, and I do them as I type them up and send them off to people as an attachment so that they can print them out and read them at their leisure.
Okay, so there are many things.
I've had many people contact me about spirits in their home and things like that. When it comes to spirit work, there's no charge for that. I don't charge
sure.
for anything like that. You know,
right.
they're my friends, and I don't do that.
Okay.
I mean,
now,
I don't charge for that.
Right. When you do this long distance, do you have more or less like a, is it like a remote viewing sort of ability with it?
I work with spirit to ask spirit to show me what I need to know about the person I'm reading for.
Okay. So you kind of like have your old, your own spirit guides then, correct?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay. You know, a lot of people, they're very skeptical concerning psychics, especially in the field right now, which, personally, I don't understand that, because I will not conduct an investigation without a psychic medium or an intuitive or a sensitive or a clairvoyant. I won't do it. I kind of like to know what it is that I'm dealing with, and if I have somebody that I can trust, which I do, I know that person's not going to steer me wrong. What do you think about how it is nowadays, that it's like, I've actually met people that are, they're really sort of like aggressive dislike for psychics. Have you come across that kind of thing? And what do you think of that attitude?
I think that's the skepticism is healthy.
Yes, absolutely.
To a point, because we don't have to sit there and accept everything that somebody tells us.
Right.
And I've told several people who have been very kind, and they've emailed me and said, I love your book, but I just can't believe in spirits. And I say, well, that's all fine and good. I hope you enjoyed the book, though. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I did. I loved it. Well, then that's half the battle right there. That's all I ask. So
right.
It's good to have a healthy skepticism. Because even I, when I feel something or when something presents itself to me, I don't automatically jump on the spirit bandwagon either. I
sure.
try to make sure there's not a logical explanation for what's going on. And then at that point, then I'll quiet down and I'll open up and go, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Unless something's right in my face, then I'll quiet down and think first.
Sure.
Before I go, yeah, we've got a spirit here. It's just like with the doorman. I was going, what is wrong with this door?
You know, it's like with skepticism, and you you say a very healthy skepticism, and it's like, I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen too much and experienced too much in my life to even call myself a skeptic. I call myself a believer, but I'm a believer that hasn't turned his brain off.
There you go. That's a good one.
But is that a form of skepticism, or, what do you think of something like that?
That's thinking.
I knew exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that. I knew that's where you were going. But definitely. I just think it's interesting that when you do talk to people and they're like, hey, I love your book, but I don't really believe in spirits, so more or less I don't believe in what you're saying. So doesn't it kind of make you feel like they're calling you a liar?
A little bit, but most people have been very kind about that. They've been appropriate. They've been just nice people to talk to. I've had a couple that were a little bit rude, but that's okay too.
Yeah. No, I know exactly how that is. I deal with that quite a bit, myself. I don't really talk about it very much on the air, but I will, will admit to it. I am a clairvoyant. So it's, my wife hates it. You know what I'm saying? We were in the Target one time, in a local Target around here. And I had a guy come up to me and says, my name's Mike. And it's like, I can't see him, but I can feel him, and I can, I know that he's there, and it's like I can feel his presence, and I'm talking to him. My wife turns around, she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm talking to Mike. He's following us around the store right now. And she's like, I hate when you do that. It's so insane. I mean, how do you do that? And it's like you, it runs in my family. So it's like it's kind of one of those things that you can't help doing, especially when, a dude like Mike comes through. He wanted to come home with me. I'm like, you have to stay here, Mike.
Exactly.
You cannot come with me. Now, do you have that kind of thing that happens to you often? Do you get what I like to refer as ride-alongs?
Unfortunately, every once in a while, yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last chapter of the book actually talks about one that was very difficult at her service. She had to have the last word in everything, and mm-hmm. even her family knew that she was upset during the service.
Okay. So, I mean, she actually...
And this has happened a number of times, but this one in particular, she ended up being a ride-along.
Mm-hmm.
And she followed me home and did not like me very well, and things had to be taken care of.
Okay, you say things have to be taken care of. How do you take care of something like that? And allow me to just say, it's like, and that's another thing that people don't in the field these days, they really don't believe in. They don't believe in cleansing homes, and they don't believe in spirit rescue. Personally, I'm not going to kick something out of a house unless I feel it really deserves, that it really needs to, like, go. But when you say that, you know, that you had to get rid of her, what's the process of getting rid of a spirit like this?
In that particular case, cleansing wasn't needed until after everything else was taken care of, which I did do once she was quieted down. But I had mistakenly taken one of her funeral folders, the memorial okay. folders that you get at a funeral, and I put it in my pocket. And
okay.
she didn't feel that I had the right to that property. She was a very, very controlling person.
Yeah.
And when I took that back to the funeral home, then everything quieted down.
Now, you know what? I would imagine that she was like that in life. Did you?
She was.
Now, were you able to talk to the family about this? It's like, now, when I say that, were you able to go to the family and be like, hey, you know, your relative is with me right now. Were you able to talk to them about that?
No, I didn't do that.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be rather difficult to do. Mm-hmm. But what were you able to find out about her, how she was in life? Was she that difficult? Was she that controlling? It almost sounds like, you know, you're dealt with my mom in a way, but...
She was very controlling, down to the music that she wanted, down to giving the funeral director that worked there, giving her hassles during the day, and even not liking the deacon that came in to recite the rosary.
So basically, even after death, she still wanted to have complete and total control over everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, I find that incredibly fascinating. But mm-hmm. you know, have you ever had any of those kind of spirits that have attached you that have enriched your life in some way?
There have been children who have attached to me a little bit, and they've enriched my life in that I was able to help get justice for one. I can't go into the details of that. I'm not at liberty to do that.
That's quite all right,
but,
I understand.
He did follow me home, and one, shall we say, she stayed in my car. Why, I don't know. But she stayed
okay.
in my car, and even my husband noticed that my car was cold all the time. And she did graffiti on the moonroof of my car.
Okay.
And after the person who took her life was taken to jail, then
yeah.
it disappeared, and it all settled down. And that let me know that even children have a message to give us. Even when they've passed over, they enrich our lives in many ways.
I just, for me as a parent, the idea of dealing with children's spirits, it's definitely the more difficult and it's the more sad, especially when you do have an ability, because you're a little bit more open and attuned
mm-hmm.
to what it is it's trying to tell you. And now, a lot of people say with, like, spirits that the reason that they stick around is because they don't know their... that idea, because how can you not know...
Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you just fine. Did I drop off for a second?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Sounded like somebody shut a door.
Oh, well, it wouldn't surprise me around here. But, now... One of the things that I don't buy into, the whole idea, is that the reason people stick around is because, well, they don't know that they're dead. How can you not know that you're dead?
Some are taken so quickly that they don't know. Now, there are some that are confused and that are lost and need a little help and clarification and compassion because they are confused, they're scared. Mm-hmm. But then there are others that have crossed over, so to speak, and then come back to come and be our guides, to be our protectors, to be guardians. And I speak of some of those in the book. There are also some of those that just feel that they have unfinished business and they want to work through somebody else or in some way where they can finish that business, such as the doorman.
Sure.
He had unfinished business. And then there are others who are angry and just downright mad.
Sure. Yeah, I was too young and I died. And yeah, I've definitely dealt with that kind of spirit before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so sometimes, too, there are also people who felt that they weren't cared about in life, or perhaps they were just ignored, neglected. Though they gave a lot of themselves, they didn't get any compassion back. And sometimes the unfinished business that they have is somebody caring. And if you can show them a little bit of caring, a little bit of respect, and perhaps even shed a tear on their behalf, then they know that somebody cares. And they got that one little thing, and then they can cross over. They can go and do whatever it is that they do on the other side.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with speaking to spirits, do you channeling, trans-channeling, anything of that nature?
How so?
Well, okay, you sit in a chair and, you know, all of a sudden you just let an entity come through you or take partial control of you, and they're able to use your voice as their instrument in getting their message across.
No, I don't go that far with them. I have spoken to some people over the phone when they're missing someone and been pacing around, and all of a sudden I will see things and speak to the person on the phone and say, I'm being shown this, I'm being shown that, I'm being told this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person on the other end will confirm whether or not that's with them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I definitely think that, dealing with children, going back to that would be the worst. When dealing with children, I mean, are they the ones that you would say are confused? Like, I'm 4 years old, I was playing, on my bike, what the hell just happened? Do you feel that that children spirits are the most confused?
A lot of the ones that I dealt with kind of wanted to stick around and still play.
Okay.
But as I would work with them, I would let them know that it was okay.
Yeah.
For them to move on. And quite often got one or more to go.
Yeah, I definitely
feel a change in the atmosphere of the room. You could feel like pinpricks and cold and anxiety and things like that. But then once they were ready to go and understood that they could go and there were other people that loved them on the other side waiting for them, then they could go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely, I'd say that's, very, very rewarding. Just a quick story, I was on an investigation one time, and, this is now when I talk about the very rewarding part. The spirit that was haunting, not only haunting, but inhabiting these people's homes. Haunting just has such a negative connotation to me, sometimes.
Exactly.
And,
what you mean.
All this spirit wanted to do was talk to another Buddhist.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it took. I happened to have shared the same school of Buddhism with him, and I was able to talk with him, and I was able to get him to move on into his next life.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that I know that this was happening is because while I was talking to him, all of our instruments and everything were just being pegged. The needles were pegged. But as soon as I was able to get him to move on into his next life, every single piece of equipment, every single EMF detector, every single compass that we had. I mean, we must have had like four or five, EMF detectors and like three compasses in that room. All of a sudden, boom. Stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And all he wanted to do was talk to another Buddhist. That's all he wanted. And I think that that's definitely where it's like, you definitely, it's a more rewarding side to this, that you're able to not only help this family that's experiencing something that they're, that they really are terrified in, and educate them on the subject, but also to help that spirit as well. I think that's really important.
Most definitely. And one does need to stay professional at a time mm-hmm. like that mm-hmm. during a funeral service or something. But I have counseled numerous family members where they remained behind and would say to me, Mariah, what do? I just don't feel like going on. And I couldn't tell them, well, your loved one is standing next to the casket. Why don't you ask them? I couldn't say that. But yeah. I would say, if you had your loved one in front of you for 5 minutes, what mm-hmm. would you ask him? Well, I would ask him or her what I could do. I said, well, why don't you do that right now? Why don't you do that? And yeah. without them knowing it, their loved one would be standing in front of them yeah. and would be listening to them. And then they would turn to me and say, I just felt like I was supposed to do this, or I'm supposed to do that. Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. Now okay. you know.
Right. I have a question in the chat room from a regular listener, Rob St. Helen. He's a real friend of the show, good guy, from West Coast mm-hmm. Ghost Hunters. And his question is this, and all right, people, stop talking in the chat room so his question will stop going away. here we go. It's, the question is, does she think, since we are in the paranormal field, when we die, we, you know, will come back as a ghost for any reason? I think that that's a really good question. Do you think that that's possible, since we have a better understanding of this kind of thing, that maybe we can come back?
I think it's all personal. It depends on if a person wants to, or if a person has a feeling that he needs to. It's all individual for each okay. one. Some okay. people, I feel, just want to go. They're done. They want out of here. That's
yeah.
it. And then others have a reason, or feel that they have a reason, or some are confused. You know, life taken very quickly. 1 minute I'm here, then I'm gone. What happened? And so it's individual.
Yeah, I would definitely say that as well. I know that when I die, I definitely want to move on to my next incarnation. And according to my good, you know, friend who's a psychic, she says, I still got two more to go, so I have that to look forward to.
I'd like to come back and kind of haunt a few people.
You know what? There's a couple of them, and you know, Rob St. Helen is definitely one of them. So,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, before we let you go, oh, hang on 1 second. Now, okay, I got another question for you. The one says, the question is, does Mariah ever see family spirits waiting for those who just departed?
I don't see them, but I feel them. I feel
okay.
the energy. And I feel energy that reminds me of my grandmother, or of my grandfather, or of a father-type energy. I feel that type of thing. For me, it's like I can't see into the other side. It's not my trip, so it's not my privilege to see over there. It's the deceased's privilege to see over there. It's kind of like a private party.
Right. I think that something like that would be, like you said, it's a private party. It's like, why would I want you to see my grandmother on the other side?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, yeah, most definitely. I mean, I want to talk to my grandmother every, you know, sometime, but, my friend won't let her come through. So, you know, she won't let her come through because she does have a message for me. She's just not ready to give it to me yet. So, but
right. She's doing her own thing on the other side, and when it's yeah. her time to tell you, then she will.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mariah Delacroix, this has been an incredibly fascinating conversation. I mean, I always here at Paranormal Underground, we're very, you know, psychic friendly. Definitely like to get that more spiritual side of the paranormal, rather than just science this and science that and EMF detector this and EMF detector that. I definitely think that we have this God-given talents, more or less, to, you know, to not only be able to connect with the living, but also to be able to connect with the dead. We just have to learn how to develop that kind of thing. Before I let you go, is there, you know, any websites, you have a blog or, you know, of course your book, anything that you would like to, you know, speak about before we let you go?
Well, my book is available through the publisher directly, which is Llewellyn Worldwide. And I also have two blogs, mariasvisions.blogspot.com, as well as mariasquietcorner.blogspot.com. And I also have a website, www.ladymariah.com.
Outstanding. So, okay, you know, Mariah Delacroix, like I said, it's been a fascinating conversation, and it's so sad when these kind of fascinating conversations, they go so quickly, but that just means you're engrossed. So,
thank you.
Mariah, I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us on Paranormal Underground. It's been great talking to you. So hopefully one day we can have you come back again.
Oh, I'd love to, Rick. It's been good to be here.
Okay, great. That's what I like to hear. We not only do we want to put a good show on for our listeners, but we also want to, you know, treat our guests like friends and treat them right. So, you know, Mariah, thank you so much again for being on Paranormal Underground.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
So I think what we're going to do, ladies and germs, before, or rather should I say, since it's the Halloween edition, Ghosts and Ghouls, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking werewolves, legends. We're going to be talking to J.W. Holmes, who is the author of Holy Moon, as well as his creative partner, Mark Brer, who is actually the guy that designed the cover for his book. We're going to be talking about werewolves, legends, and the time that J.W. Holmes spent on an episode of Ghost Adventures. So stick around. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We'll be right back.
Today, you hit the news bar. You checked your email. You checked your fantasy football team. You rejected an insulting trade offer. You ate your lunch. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a 175-mile-per-hour hurricane blows through your city, leaving it in a state of ruin. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
With the new year comes resolutions, when we resolve to stop snacking and slacking. Resolve to start reading and running. This year, resolve to help someone else too. Resolve to support the American Red Cross, because the Red Cross provides hope, help, and compassion, not only during disasters, but every day. Resolve to do something that means something. Support the American Red Cross before the new year. Visit redcross.org today.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store and your Android phone. Download it today.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American news and politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Thank you. station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale. Like I said earlier, Karen is not joining us because she's sick, so if we could, you know, send out some good, thoughts and, you know, her way, and, you know, hopefully she'll get better. For the last hour, though, we were talking, for our first hour, we were talking to Mariah Delacroix, who is a sensitive intuitive, as well as the author of Restless in Peace, A Psychic Mortician's Encounters with Those Who Won't Rest. So it was an outstanding hour worth of conversation. Really hope to have her on again. So again, thank you, Mariah. Joining us for the second hour, though, soldiering on in our Halloween edition, we are joined by J.W. Holmes, who is the author of Holy Moon, as well as his creative partner, Mark Brer. So, guys, J.W., Mark, welcome to the Underground. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
So, you know, before we get into talking about werewolf legends, because like I said before, you know, before we went on air, guys, that's definitely one of my more favorite monsters to talk about is the werewolf. But, you know, before we talk about that, J.W., I want to kind of like go with you right now and talk about your book. Excuse me. Hello?
Did anybody say anything?
No, I thought one of you guys had said something. I'm sorry about that.
No. I think maybe one of us fell out of their chair or something. I don't know.
It was some kind of weird interference. But, J.W., let's talk about your book series, Holy Moon. Now, I find this very interesting because, now, from what I was reading about it, that your main character, not only is he a werewolf, but he also happens to be a born-again Christian. How do you work something that like that in? Because doesn't that sort of fly in the face of the whole thou shalt not kill motif?
Oh, yeah, it does. In fact, I think, you know, there's a lot of ironies, you know, to the character. Mm-hmm. And feel free to call me Jay, because I know JW is a mouthful.
Oh, okay. But
yeah, you know, and I was thinking about it. I was thinking, you know, werewolves, you know, they're always like, and I think Mark had the same impression, is that you always see them as a guy or somebody who's just out of control, and they run through the woods and they kill people, and that's about the whole length of the story, really.
Sure.
You know, and I just kind of thought, well, you know, from ancestral lore, from, you know, where my family came from, which was, you know, Scandinavia, mm-hmm. you know, werewolves really weren't depicted like that. They were more like, you know, they were kind of heroic and noble and whatnot. And it wasn't until like the later years where, you know, like Hollywood and the church got a hold of it and really kind of twisted it into something kind of evil.
Right.
And I just kind of thought it'd be nice to be able to go back and have a werewolf that was actually good, you know, and actually almost like a superhero monster that protected the people. And it took me some time, but I made that extra step where, well, why not make him Christian too? You know, just take that last step, because here you have, you know, in the character, something that's kind of like the dog of the devil. And yet in his real life, you know, he's really a devout Christian.
So how did this guy who, you know, I'm not a Christian guy, so I mean, I hope you'll excuse me if I don't really, you know, really know the lingo too much, but how does somebody that has, you know, the spirit of God living within them, how are they something like this? How would God even allow that? What happened to him that he was turned into a werewolf?
Well, in the book, and I guess I'm not giving away too much about it when you, to go into that, but basically he was in college and, you know, he'd been out drinking one night, you know, which is really odd for a college student, I think.
Hmm.
But
even more so odd than a Christian werewolf. But yeah, sure. Proceed.
Yeah. But anyway, he went into an alley, and it was in this alley that he encountered another werewolf that bit him and didn't kill him. So he became a werewolf. Because the whole werewolf thing really isn't religious. You know, it's more of a disease. And that's kind of how I wanted it to bring it back to a little bit, to get away from this, you know, the whole pentagram on the hand kind of thing and you know, just all that. I just wanted to get away from it and get back to the focus that, you know, lycanthropy was a disease. You know, it wasn't anything, you know, religious or anything like that. Sure. But I, you know, too, it just made for a good story.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. You know, certainly is different. I mean, when I have been coming up as, you know, as a as having an interest in spirits and cryptozoology, when I always thought, everything that I've ever read about werewolfery, I guess you could say, is that that it was something that came through as a pact with the devil. So, I mean, how was it that, you know, that the Scandinavian, how was it that Scandinavian werewolves were different from, say, you know, a guy like Peter Stump, who sold his soul to the devil for a curse belt made with fur? How was that different?
Well, if you go back to like the Viking days, and you've heard of the berserkers.
Sure, of course.
You know, who were kind of like the shock troops for the Vikings. You know, they would put on their bear skins, you know, or their bear skirts or whatever, and mm-hmm. kind of where we get the word berserker. You know, werebeast in Scandinavia were kind of common as far as, you know, story and folklore. And, you know, there, you have to remember, Christianity didn't really hit until really around 1000, 1200 AD.
Sure.
And even then, it was really forced upon them. You know, they didn't want to convert, but they were told, hey, you're going to convert or you're going to die. Right. You know, and it was, you know, and that too really wasn't the most Christian angle, you know, to induct people into Christianity, but that's the way it was. Right. But, you know, they still had their traditions, and those traditions and their folklore just kind of lived on anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, back then, they were more of on man's side than, you know, than the monster side, really. And, it, you know, that's just kind of how in the children's stories that I grew up with, that's how the werewolf or the werebear or whatever you want to go with, because there's more than just those two. It's just kind of how they were perceived.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because when you look at a lot of different cultures from around the world, everything from being European all the way to, you know, South America with El Lobazón, there really is very much a shared tradition with the idea of man becoming beast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you say that definitely offers, you know, that it offers that kind of like, hey, this is quite possibly something very real?
Yeah, and I think you can take it back to the early days. You know, even with like the Neanderthals and the earlier versions of the Homo sapien, where mm-hmm. you know they were hunters, you know, sure. primarily. And I think back then, you know, they would look around and they would see the wolf as being pretty much the ultimate predator.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine them, you know, sitting around thinking, "Boy, I wish I could hunt like them." You know, and because they shared a lot of traits, you know, with us as mankind. You know, I mean, you know, they're very protective of their children. They yeah. have to hunt. They're community based. You know, they have their packs, and we just kind of shared a lot with them. And I think, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, they started to think, well, what if, you know, if we wore their skin, you know, would that make us a better hunter? And then, mm-hmm. you know, they could take an extra leap and say, well, what if we could somehow, you know, metaphysically, even though they didn't have that word back then, it's just kind of in the thought process, become them, you know.
So kind of like a sympathetic magic sort of thing.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. And, you know, the whole thing, it just kind of probably evolved that way. And, you know, and it turned it, you know, not just with wolves, but, you know, also with bears and seals and all sorts of different animals, you know, because everywhere you go, I mean, even in like South America and Mexico, they had the were jaguar,
right.
you know. So, I mean, it was all over the world. This thought process was going on.
Yeah. It definitely makes you think that maybe there's more of a shared culture than what we really do think.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things out there, you know, and we could, you know, if you even look at the pyramids, not to get really far off track, but
yeah.
they're everywhere, you know.
Right.
Well, how did all this thought process happen, you know, without the internet back then?
Yeah.
You know, these things just were.
Right, exactly. So with you, Mark, where do you fit into all this? I know that you are the creative, or Jay's creative partner. What was your part in bringing Holy Moon?
Well, yeah, when Jay contacted me. He was looking for somebody to partner with on some creative projects, and this is actually one of several that we have in the works. And when we began talking about Holy Moon, you know, of course, he had the story for quite a while and been working with it, writing it. And when I first heard about the story, I thought, wow, that's really a neat angle on the werewolf. Because I myself, I hadn't even heard of anything like that before. You know, I've grown up with the Lon Chaney Jr. and American Werewolf in London and The Howling and all that. And you have images of that in your mind. You don't think about a Christian man, you know, becoming a wolf or becoming a protector, and, you know, not to show up on your doorstep all the time and say, "Hi, I'm here to rip your throat out." You know, just hearing that was very intriguing to me to put that into a visual, you know, arena, because I'm always thinking visually. That's what I do for a living. And, you know, I just was just getting a lot of images from that we could have fun with. And it's just been a good adventure, just me and Jay working on some ideas. So, yeah.
Right. Now, before we went on air, we were talking a little bit about, you know, some of the more famous American, episodes of Werewolfery, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But one of the more interesting ones that we were talking about was the video of the Michigan Dogman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a disappointment, but
it was. I was getting ready to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge disappointment. So what exactly is a Michigan Dogman, and how did it turn into such a disappointment?
Well, you know, we were talking about the Beast of Bray Road,
yeah.
You know, and I kind of hint towards that in Holy Moon. For people that are fans of the Beast of Bray Road, they'll see where, you know, that entry is. I think that the Michigan Dogman was kind of an offtake of the Beast of Bray Road. Because around that, when Linda Godfrey, you know, he was reporting on the Beast of Bray Road. She's the one, I think, that really made him popular.
Right.
You know, there seemed to be a lot of, you know, were dog man activity going on up around the Great Lakes.
Sure.
And so the Michigan Dogman pops up. And, she, you know, there had been talks about a similar thing like the Beast of Bray Road wandering around Michigan anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And just around that whole area. And this video pops up, and you want me to talk about what? Do you want me to blow it for everybody? I guess.
Well, I think pretty much everybody knows that it was you know, fake. So, but yeah.
Yeah, that was so sad.
Yeah, it was.
but he's in his ghillie suit, and he's chasing down the camera and stuff. And the production was just so spot on, I thought. I was a believer. I was like hoping, you know, I hope nobody comes out and tells me that this thing's fake. You know,
I was watching the video, and it's like, I'm not the kind of person who scares easily. You know what I'm saying? I've been in this field a long time. And it's like, I'm watching this thing, and it's like, holy crap, does something like this, is it possible that this is real?
Yeah.
Yeah, it scared me. I thought it was scary.
And you think about it, and when you watch that first video, the first installment of it, I don't care who you are, there was a part of you that believed, you know? Yeah. And it may not have been a werewolf, but by golly, that thing was scary, whatever it was, you know? And I was waiting for somebody to say it was, you know, explain it, you know? But I never for a million years would have thought it was some guy on all fours in a ghillie suit.
Especially moving like that with such an... he would have had to have practiced that kind of movement for a long time because it was just so fluid.
It was, yeah. I mean, and then they had that second installment where they had the people dressed up like people of the time. Mm-hmm. They had the truck that was, you know, and the snowmobile. They had a snowmobile that in there from the 50s or 60s, whenever it was supposed to have happened.
Right.
And, a lot of work went into that to fool people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I know that there's people, you know, werewolf enthusiasts that are upset about it, you know, because it's kind of like when they said that they had caught Bigfoot a couple of years ago, and it turned out to be phony. You know, and that whole Bigfoot community was in an uproar about that. And I can see the werewolf enthusiast on this Michigan Dogman being the same way. But yeah. Also, you know, I kind of have to give the guy kudos and say, like, you know, a lot of work went into that, and he did a good job fooling a lot of people, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, and you talk about with the Bigfoot thing, too, because a lot of people would look at that and they find out that how, you know, incredibly phony this is. And then they would look at the Patterson-Gimlin film of the of Bigfoot. And I got to tell you something, no matter how hard you try, no matter how hard you look at that video, that, to me, and even the guys like Jeff Meldrum, who is not even really strictly a cryptozoologist, look at that video, and it's like, this, there is a legitimate animal there.
Yeah. And everybody goes back to his movement on film, how a man just doesn't move like that, and they're right.
Yeah. We were talking about that a couple of months ago, and our science editor, J.D. Harrison, he's a scientist, and he was telling us that there is a part in the video of the Patterson-Gimlin film where you can actually see what looks like a tumor or a cyst that is moving underneath the skin and the fur by this creature's knee. And he was like, without Photoshop, there is no way on earth that you could possibly fake something like that. He's like, that is the thing right there that said, tells me this video is real.
Yeah, I actually saw, I don't know if you guys saw the special where they were able to ascertain that it was a female.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you think about it, when somebody's out there to try to fake something, to run through the woods or build a suit, you usually don't pick a female.
See, yeah, and that's all, it's obviously female because you can see the breasts.
Yeah.
So there was a question that Cheryl asked in the chat room, and I know JW, we already answered it because you guys are on Skype as well. But do you think that there are real werewolves out there, people that can really make that transition?
I think so, but I don't think it's in the proper way of being a werewolf.
Okay,
like growing the skin and the fingernails and the elongated snout. You know, I don't think that a werewolf like that really exists out there. I do think there are cases of lunacy.
Sure.
You know, where a man can actually get so crazy and believe it himself that his actions come extremely close to the truth or to fantasy, if you will.
Sure.
And I think that in itself is kind of scary. In the old days, I mean, it could have been, you know, something just like, you know, feral people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that were just, you've heard about like the children that were raised by animals or wolves or something like that.
Yeah, and I think a Mala and Kamala or something like that in India, sure.
Yeah, and they don't really have any real human characteristics,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I mean, they've been removed, you know, and I could see that totally happening. I could see a person, getting into that lunatic state, you know, or drawing themselves in willingly into that to a lunatic state where it would become frightening, and you might mistake them for some kind of creature,
right?
You know, like a werewolf.
And you know, and it's funny that you say that because I'm reminded of a case over in England. Bill Ramsey, I believe his name was, and His story was very interesting because he said that as a child, he was possessed by the spirit of a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And are you guys familiar with that?
I'm not, but I've heard of people being possessed by like a totem animal.
Yeah.
In the same sense.
It's strange though, because this is England and I'm sure that, you know, the Celts had their kind of like their totem animal, just like the Native Americans. But he said that as a child, he was out playing in the backyard, and all of a sudden, like, he was just possessed by this the spirit of a wolf. And it followed him all the way up into, I think he was in his 50s when he finally got, you know, some kind of help with it. Apparently, he had the Warrens, Lorraine and I can't remember her husband's name, but the Warrens, they went over to England and they convinced the guy that he was somehow possessed by a demon. Well, rather than this guy actually suffering from some kind of mental illness that he's had since a child.
Yeah.
So what do you think of something like that? You know, do you think that there's like a demonic possession that goes on with people, or it's just they're batshit crazy?
Oh, I think
crazy?
It can happen, yeah. I totally yeah, think it can happen.
For sure.
Because, I mean, there's just too many cases where a psychologist will come in and try and explain something, you know, spiritual away. Mm-hmm. You know, through science, and that's all fun. But you know, when you watch something like the backstory on a movie like The Exorcist,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in fact, I was watching this on television the other day. When they had a psychologist come in and explain everything, except how did the boy know how to speak Latin? You know,
I think
when the priest talked, he asked him in Latin, you know, a question, and the boy, you know, replied, and it wasn't with his own voice, you know, replied back in Latin and answered his question.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he didn't know Latin, but, you know, the psychiatrist can't come up with an answer for that, and I'll promise you, he'll try to avoid the question.
Oh, no, I absolutely know that I actually work in the psychiatric field, and being, you know, a paranormal researcher and investigator, I oftentimes get a lot of weird looks. But, you know, there was... When you say that, I believe that they said that that there was like a cryptomnesia, where they had actually heard it once before, and they had been around it. Especially it happens, you know, with Latin being in Catholic families, and that's how they sort of explained it, that they were exposed to it at a young age, and it just sort of came out through this through their mental illness.
Well, yeah, and that stuff happens, you know. Yeah. I mean, of course it does, but I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, the whole lunacy thing, you know, I think you can, in some cases, you know, if you can have ghosts and you can have demons, you know, mm-hmm. and the demons possess you, then, you know, then you've kind of entered a new level of lunacy.
Right.
And yeah, some, you know, personally, I kind of think you have to, I don't know, maybe accept the demon, even if it's unconscious.
Sure.
You know, to get that done. But, you know, there's a lot of cases out there that we'll never hear of, you know,
right.
because of family embarrassment and stuff like that, that I'm sure it goes on.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely been in this, you know, around this stuff long enough to know that medical science, psychiatric science, whatever, is not going to be able to completely explain that. It's just, it's inconceivable, and would even kind of almost go against common sense to say we can explain this completely, because, well, I'm sorry, you have 8 years of higher education, but explain this.
Yeah.
And you can't.
Yeah, well, and there's people, you know, some psychologists will tell you when you see a ghost, that's mm-hmm. in your mind. You're making that ghost.
Yeah, and you kind of got to, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, even though you've got five or six other people around you that are seeing or hearing the same ghost.
Yeah, yeah. Or 10 or 20 people over a 100-year period who have all said, yeah, we've seen this thing, they have written down, but it's like, so it can't all just be in your mind.
Right. Well, and going back to the Beast of Bray Road, how many people that didn't even know each other, never even heard of the story before it broke, had seen the Beast?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I remember I was a senior in high school when all that was going on back in like 91 and 92. And I was sitting in my current events class, and my teacher, Mr. Ward, looked at me. He's like, we got a really interesting story here from Wisconsin. And he looked at me. He's like, Hale, this one is right up your alley, because he knew my interest. And he started to go into the story of the Beast of Bray Road and this werewolf. And man, when he talked about that thing, I was just hooked. You know, I'm mm-hmm. like, this is only happening 30 minutes away from where I live.
Well, I remember when I first heard it, and it was one of the big impacts to writing Holy Moon, actually,
mm-hmm.
Hearing about the Beast of Bray Road. Because the first thing I thought was, oh, because I'm, you know, I'm in northern Indiana.
Okay.
So the first thing I thought was, oh, it's close,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it wasn't a good feeling, you know. So I was kind of like, oh, I wonder if he's going to be traveling south like all the other animals are, you know,
yeah.
because of the climate change and whatever, but... But yeah, there does seem to be a mass amount of these sightings around the Great Lakes and the Eastern Coast, and you know, it kind of tells me that something that came over, you know.
See, that's exactly what I was going to ask you, because a lot of what people say really sort of looks like the whole Western European idea of what a werewolf is supposed to be. And let's face it, the Midwest is basically, you know, Western European.
Yeah. No, it's true. But we can't forget Native Americans had the skinwalkers.
Correct. That's exactly, you know, where I was going to be going next with that. The skinwalkers, the Wendigo, you know, what have you.
But I think the ones that migrated over from Europe were probably a different, you know, different character.
Sure.
You know, the skinwalkers in Native American culture, you know, I don't think that they were, I want to say, as vicious, you know, or as lunatic, you know, sure, as the ones that came over. And I'm sure, you know, it's from conditioning, from cultural conditioning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Indians tended to live in more peaceful settlements, you know, except with other tribes, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, but they had a lot of space between them. In England or in Europe or in Scandinavia, you're kind of on top of one another, even if you do have space.
Right. It's even like that nowadays.
Yeah. And I mean, and it just gets worse, you know, as population grows. But yeah, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, they haven't really migrated to the north. They haven't really migrated too much, you know, into like, the upper, northwest per mm-hmm. se. You see them in the bigger towns down south. You see them scattered around the Great Lakes, the East Coast. And that's where most of the sightings are happening, as far as, you know, as far as the United States, anyway.
Right. Now, here's something that I found really interesting about the whole episode of the Beast of Bray Road. I mean, and from what I understand, that people are still occasionally seeing something like this. Now, in, you know, even in legend and in the media, we always see the werewolf as being this vicious, relentless killer that, you know, is going to rip your head off and feast on your insides. There never was anything like that with the Beast of Bray Road.
No, and you know, when Mark and I were talking about writing the book for Holy Moon, you know, I don't think we really wanted to take that angle, you know, mm-hmm. with the character, because we wanted him to have a sound mind and all that, but he still has to deal with that beast. And yeah, the beast is out, you know, the animal side dominates, so he has to fight it.
Sure.
You know, but you know, with Mark, you know, in our talks and stuff, I mean, you know, we wanted it to have, oh, you know, more than just the blood and guts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll leave that for the bad werewolf, you know, and for all the bad entities.
Okay.
So we'll let him kind of be more protective and stuff like that. He'll hunt, you know, because he has to get something out of his system, you know.
Right.
But he doesn't have to hunt people.
Okay.
And, you know, and I think Mark was okay with that, weren't you?
Oh yeah, I mean, it was, you know, as I said before, it was intriguing to hear the concept and to talk about the idea of Holy Moon and the direction that the character was going in, because you know, it's almost like, because everybody expects when a werewolf appears on the scene, everybody thinks, oh, here it comes, you know, goriness is going to go crazy now. We're going to have blood everywhere. But with Holy Moon and the character there, you don't see that, and he's different, and you kind of wonder, you know, what's his real strength? You know, what's he dealing with? How far is he going to go? What would happen if he were to get really out of control? You know, it's a lot of variables, and it could go a lot of different directions, and that's what was intriguing to me. And it's, as I said before, it's just, you just don't hear that type of story. And I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you're talking about the Beast of Bray Road. I think in the second installment, we're going to see more of the Beast of Bray Road and get some insight on, you know, it's fiction, but it's people want some kind of background.
Sure. Of course. You
know, even if it is fiction. And I think we'll get to meet a different kind of werewolf with the Beast of Bray Road.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's been skepticism as to whether it's a werewolf or not.
See, now I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you guys' opinion about that. Now, and I personally believe this as well. I mean, a lot of people say that that this was not a werewolf, but that this was a Bigfoot sighting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, when you see illustrations or drawn depictions of the Beast of Bray Road, it doesn't facially. The ones that seem that seem similar to one another, they don't really have that werewolf characteristic, you know,
right.
The snout and the teeth and all that. It's an incredibly hairy beast. It's got kind of like a cross between a Bigfoot and a werewolf face.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's really weird. It's almost like you can't really truly classify what the heck it is.
Right. Well, that's interesting too, because it's like you get like these creature sightings all over our country in North South Carolina. You have the lizard man, and you have the Falk monster, and you have it seems that all of these things are related and they're not out to get us.
Right. And the Beast of Bray Road, the locals will call him the Beast of Bray Road. I think the locals think that he's a werewolf.
Okay.
But then you have, like, cryptozoologists, step in. And to be fair, cryptozoologists, I don't really think are, really happy about shapeshifters.
No.
I don't think they really get on the bus with the rest of us on that.
No.
But there's a creature around that area called... Oh, it's called a bluff monster, and I think it's of kind of like the Bigfoot family or whatever.
I've never heard of that before. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think the crypto crowd kind of tries to classify it as that, and
okay.
say what it's the bluff monster. It's not, it's a different kind of Sasquatch, and kind of like what's the one that goes around in Florida?
Can't think of it. Skunk ape.
Yeah, skunk ape. It escaped me there. But, and he's kind of like a shorter version of Bigfoot in a way.
Yeah.
But, I think I would leave it up to the witnesses to decide, the ones that have actually eyeballed the creature, instead of, just going off the drawings and what have you.
Right. We had Ken Gerhard, world famous cryptozoologist, on our show, I think about a year and a half ago. And he was definitely one of those ones that it's like, I'm not really buying into the whole, shapeshifter thing. He's like, whatever this thing is I think, he just told us that it's part of the nature. It's it's a real creature or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I want to get away from werewolves, before the end of the show, because I know, Jay, that you had done a little time on television, a production assistant on an episode of Ghost Adventures.
Yeah. We did that back in June.
Okay.
And that was here in Indiana. It was an episode called Black Moon Manor.
Sure.
And, I'd worked as a producer for probably about 10 years locally. And I worked with ESPN and other places. I'd worked on, pilots that never made it with Travel Channel. And, this was an opportunity to work with Ghost Adventures, which, we were fans of the show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I mean, there's one episode where they went to Birdcage Theater.
Yeah.
And Aaron is just, he's not a happy camper in that episode, but, poor Aaron. But, I had a great time working on there. It was the first time, working as a production assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And, they were long days, 12, 14 hour days. And
now, what exactly does a production assistant do?
Whatever they want.
Oh,
so pretty much a good answer. So I go
get me coffee.
I go from being the boss on my shows and in all the way down the spectrum to the low rung on the ladder, kind of. But it was a good experience because I'll tell you, those guys got me hooked on some snacks that I never would have thought I would have ever liked. Rosemary Triscuits. Who would have thought those things would have been good?
Oh, Rosemary Triscuits are awesome. My wife gets them regularly. I can't get enough of them.
I'm addicted to them now. Can't get enough of them. Zach, got me hooked on Muscle Milk because, you know, I'm into working out too.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, and it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, they were long days, but I'll tell you, those guys were a heck of a lot of fun to work with. They really were.
We had Aaron on the show once. We did a pre-tape with him. He seems like a really funny guy. You know, like he's really easy to get along with. And then we had Zach on the show, and Zach just seems like he's really, really intense.
And he's focused.
Yes.
That's how I'll say it, because you have to understand, that's his baby.
Right.
You know, that's his show. You know, I mean, when that's what he's going to be remembered for is that show, Ghost Adventures. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's very dedicated, you know, to what he's doing. You know, he's not going to have that show forever. Mm-hmm. And he's making the most of what he has right now. And
I personally plan on taking that show over next year. So totally joking.
You can arm wrestle him for it? Is that what you're going to do?
I think he would probably rip my arm off. No, but I'm totally joking. But, yeah, it's just that I'm kind of one of the most focused people I've ever spoken to.
You're absolutely right, because, I mean, you know, you're not going to sit down and have a conversation with Zach. You know, he's working.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I mean, while he's working, you know, it allows other people to, you know, Nick, Zach, and even Billy, you know, to, you know, just kind of hang back and, you know, wait for the moment, you know.
I think that's kind of unfair, though. I mean, people need a break. You can't be working 24/7 all the time. I mean, yeah, this is a field that you do have to have a certain amount of dedication to. I've been doing it for almost 30 years. And it's like, yeah, you have to have that. But at the same time, too, it's like I got a wife upstairs and a little boy sleeping up on the second floor. And I'm sorry, but I have a spirit in my basement. And I was talking about this at the prior hour. For whatever reason, he's really trying to get my attention tonight. But anyways, but it's like it's one of those you got to find that balance there. Otherwise, your life is completely, you know, you can completely screw yourself out of having a life.
Yeah. Well, no, you're right. You're right. Yeah. There was one part, though, which I didn't get. I didn't know that they were going to do till I saw the episode a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it was where they were walking into the library.
Okay.
And you remember that part?
Yeah, and, actually, I did watch that. I'm not really a fan of the television shows. I'm not anti-show.
Yeah.
I'm just not really a fan of television, period. But, yeah, I definitely watched that because I am familiar with Black Moon Manor. It's definitely one of the more frightening haunted spots in the U.S.
During that shot, I was actually just off the side talking to Billy out in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And of course Zach's walking in there, and it was just funny. And this child's getting ready to walk in. Zach looks over and he's like, he goes, "Oh, are you going in to read a book?" And the child goes, "Yeah, but I don't know you." You know, like he's scared. You know, and then the next shot, the next frame, they have the definition of the term stranger danger. You know?
Yeah, I saw that. Then, I thought that was pretty.
And
funny.
So people will sometimes walk up to me and you know, say hi and stuff like that. I'm one of those guys that, you know, people do that too, but I don't necessarily know them back. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they know me, but I don't know them. And I'll turn to whoever I'm with and I'll kind of smile after seeing that and kind of go, stranger danger, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely that was definitely one of the funnier moments on the show. You know, with like Black Moon Manor, it's definitely a really terrifying kind of place. I mean, what exactly goes on there? And did you yourself have any personal experiences?
No, I didn't really. Mm-hmm. You know, but. You know, we were busy. We were a crew.
Sure.
You know, so we were hopping around doing what we had to do. I think the real evidence was gotten in the lockdown, you know, because that's where, you know, everything's primed to happen anyway. It was a creepy house in the sense that it had a hole in the middle of the floor, a well, mm-hmm. you know, just right there. Mark, you saw that episode, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that hole was kind of creepy, and they were talking about it kind of being like a nuclear generator for spirits. you know, like a porthole for it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I mean, our family home was built in 1824. And, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, that house, that Black Moon Manor place, was creepier than our house, I think, you know.
Yeah.
It's this guy.
They spent a good part of the show making sure someone didn't back up and fall into the hole while they were doing their activities.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, there was one part of the story I don't think anybody got to hear in the show, but there was an old lady, I believe, that was out in the cold in that house. And this wasn't too long ago. This was like, I think it was last century, but not too long ago. And she was
just yesterday.
Well, yeah, 2012, 1980, something like that. And it wasn't like World War II or anything like that. But
right.
She died out in the cold. She was in a wheelchair, I believe, and she died from freezing to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's kind of violent, I think, in a way. You know, that had to be some kind of serious suffering going on there. But, you know, you kind of wonder if she's around, you know, with the child that was there, that little girl. But who knows? You know, I mean, it's Indiana. Indiana's got a lot of creepy places because we're kind of the backwoods of the Midwest, you know. And
sure.
There's a lot of unspoken places in Indiana that creepy things have happened, you know, even around Mark's area down there. So,
well, you know, being from, you know, my hometown is Chicago, Illinois, and it's like, you know, it's an entire city that's, like I like to say, is built on bullets, booze, babes, you know. It's
but you've got like parking lots and buildings on top of cemeteries.
Oh yeah,
that never moved. I mean, how much more creepier can it get?
Oh yeah, yeah. In fact, I was just having a friend of mine asking me today about some places down in the city, and one of the legends, it's like, I've never really heard of that one before, but yeah, I can definitely tell you that Lincoln Park on the north side of Chicago, yeah, it's built over a giant graveyard. So
yeah,
it's really not. I'm sorry, what's that?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's really not too much of a stretch of the imagination that you do hear a lot of ghost stories from that area. So
no, yeah, you know, and plus those grave sites are built on old Native American mounds too,
where right.
Indians were buried, because you had, I believe it was called the Chicago tribe originally.
Lionawek, yeah.
And, yeah, so, I mean, it's just, it's a creepy place, all right.
Yeah.
Definitely. And yeah. We found, the crew and I found something else that was kind of eerie, was Black Moon Manor is based in Buck Creek Township.
Okay.
And I'm from a town called Buck Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a real normal name around here. You
no.
know? So, you know, it was one of those moments where we just kind of went, you know, it was kind of,
yeah. But now with Black Moon Manor, there was also the thing too, that it was, that a lot of people had died there because of, I can't remember what disease was it again?
I almost want to say it was like, measles or polio or something like that.
Okay.
I forget what it was.
Okay.
But I wasn't in on that part of the show. I was just, you know. But yeah, there was a lot of people, and I mean, it was bunk to bunk in there.
Yeah.
You know, cause in the old days they didn't really care about comfort, you know, like they do today, like, you know, easing your pain and whatever.
Right. We're just going to put you away and let you die, more or less.
Pretty much. Yeah. And, you know, and it had to be horrible, you know, to
I imagine
like that. But yeah, and a lot of them were buried, you know, pretty much right next door to the house. I mean, not literally next door, but like in the next field or something like that, which made it really creepy.
Yeah, and it's definitely a very creepy looking place, and just the area in and of itself too, with the woods and the fields, and it's just it's a very scary looking place. But you know, before we go, you know, I just want to say to Jay and Mark, you know, thanks guys for joining us. I think it was, you know, fun talking about it. You know, we didn't really stay on topic, you know, 100% of the time, but, you know, hey, that sometimes happens on talk radio. So, but,
sure.
You know, is there any websites or, you know, of course you have the book, Jay, you know, any websites, any blogs, anything that you, you know, beside the book that you're trying to, you know, to make people aware of?
There's my website, author jwholmes.com. Mm-hmm. And of course, Mark's website. You want to give that out real quick?
Sure. It's lightspeedstudiosonline.com.
Right. And he's got a lot of his artwork up there. And, you know, of course, he did the cover for Holy Moon. What did you think of that cover, by the way?
I thought the cover looked great. I mean, it was amazingly vivid.
We looked at a lot of different werewolf book covers, and you just don't find anything that really jumps out at people these days.
Yeah, and with him holding the cross in his, I think it was his right hand. I mean, that definitely, you know, shows that this is something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when people read the book, and our editor Apple Arden Scott did a good job of you know, keeping me focused as I was writing it. You know, it does a good job of you know, showing a good side, you know, to the werewolf, but there's also bad werewolves in there too. So it gives the werewolf a chance.
Well, it was like that television show that I remember when I was a kid. It was on Fox back in the late 80s, Werewolf. I mean, that was
I remember that show. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that pentagram on his hand that would start to bleed and change. And I thought it was odd that the Rifleman was the lead werewolf.
Yeah.
You know, to get past Chuck Connors being the lead werewolf, you know.
Yeah. And it was funny, too, because that show came at a time I had just, during that summer, I just got hit by a car and I hurt my leg really bad. So it was like, for me as a kid, even though I'm like, you know, 13 years old at the time, having those kind of interests. I mean, here's this television show about a werewolf. I mean, how can I not watch it? Because not only was I a kid, but I'm also a humongous nerd, too. So, but, you know, with that being said, I just want to say, you know, thank you again to J.W. Holmes and you as well, Mark Brer, for, you know, being on Paranormal Underground tonight. It was a great conversation.
Thank you very much. We had a wonderful time.
Yeah. I hope, you know, maybe someday we can get you guys back on.
Oh, definitely. We're going to have, you know, the second installment coming out in probably December.
Okay.
And of course, we've also got the Nordic coming out this month, which is alien-based.
Oh.
And that has an original storyline that nobody's ever done before as well.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely have to get you. I'm sorry, I wasn't aware of the Nordic thing, but, you know, we'll definitely have to get you guys on again so we can talk about that, because I do love aliens.
Oh, yeah. We do, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jay and Mark, for coming on the show. And like I said, we'll have you on again sometime. And, you know, have a good night.
You, too. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. So, Cheryl, if I can bring you on.
Hi.
Hi. So, what do we got coming up?
Coming up next week, we have, November 8th. We have Jesse Bradley. He's the co-founder of Afterlife Paranormal Investigations of the Carolinas. Okay. They have a website, afterlifeparanormalofthecarolinas.com. Mm-hmm. So people can go check them out. And we have a lot of great guests in November. And I just wanted to tell anyone who was tuning in tonight for Jill Marie Morris. She was on the East Coast, so we needed to move her show to later in the month, so she'll be on November 29th instead. But I just
she's doing okay though, right? Everything is great with her.
Jill said that everything is fine where she's at. I just want to let everybody know on the East Coast, everyone here at the Paranormal Underground team is sending positive thoughts your way. You know, seeing these things on the news, I can't even imagine being in those conditions. So it's
well, let's look at New York. I mean, there's only one city that's tougher than here in Chicago, and that's New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, definitely New York has gotten through many, many things, mm-hmm. and, you know, 9/11 being one of them, and now the storm, and it's a tough city.
Right. Well, we actually have some listeners from New York tonight, so
fantastic.
Just letting them know that we're thinking about them, and we'll continue to. So hopefully they'll have a speedy recovery there.
Very good. Yeah. Now, we also have a new edition of Paranormal Underground magazine coming out, correct?
We do. It's actually ready to go. I just need to put it online, and that should happen tomorrow. So if everyone wants to check it out, it's at paranormalunderground.net. We have a featured story on In the Dark, Investigations, and they are a team out of Illinois, your home state, Rick.
Yep.
And they are a really cool team. They've done a lot of interesting investigations in and around their home state, which they talk about in the article, so people could check that out. We also have, actually, Karen was a writing fiend for this issue. She wrote a review of the DivvyBox book, and she also wrote a special report on her time living with the what she calls the Fibic box, which is an exact replica of the Dybbuk box. So she was doing a presentation at a local paranormal conference, and the owner of the box, Jason Haxton, let her borrow the replica. And some interesting things happened she had the replica
the thing,
at home.
Here's the thing, like, with my wife, Jamie. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's... she wrote about what happened and discusses, well, is it the box or is it just life in general? But...
Yeah.
So go ahead.
There was like this. There just seems to. I don't know if there's like something wrong with the cord on my. Maybe I need to finally get my my mic or whatever fixed.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I kept interrupting you because I didn't realize you were. Sorry about that, Cheryl.
That's okay. Oh, just real quick. The conference she spoke at. It looks like Elaine in the chat room said it was the Port Gamble Ghost Conference.
Oh, okay.
So that was in her area on the West Coast.
Okay. Yeah, there's, you know, my wife is, you know, she's not really a believer, but she's open-minded. But however, there's two things that I'm absolutely not allowed to do, and she has told me that I will leave you if you do any of these things. I'm not allowed to step anywhere near Bobby Mackey's, which kind of puts a dent in, you know, for future plans.
Right.
But, and I'm not allowed to have the Dybbuk or the Fibic box anywhere near this house. She said that if any of those two things, if I see that, hear about it, I'm gone.
Your wife is very wise, Rick.
Yeah, I think she is too. Definitely wise. Far wiser than I am.
Yeah.
So,
I'm just going to tell you a couple more quick things about the magazine. There's also your story that you wrote for us on Illinois cryptids, and in particular, you wrote about a lake monster as well as a mud monster, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
So people want to check that out. We have a few other stories that that you'll want to read. We have Jack Kenna's conclusion to his ghost hunter case file on a couple of investigations he did in San Diego, California. He investigated the Star of India with San Diego ghost hunters as well as the Whaley House. So hopefully people can check out the issue and let us know what they think. Before we go, I want to personally thank our guests tonight, Mariah Delacroix and J.W. Holmes and his creative partner, Mark Breyer. Thank you so much for coming on and talking. I thought it was a fascinating show tonight. I really did.
Right. You know, there was something that we forgot to cover before Jay and Mark left us. You can also find their book on the Nook, Kindle, and Amazon. So.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So if you guys are looking for it there, too, and I have it both a Nook and a Kindle on my phone. So I definitely use one of those to get that.
Very cool.
So just, again, thank you to J.W. Holmes and Mark Breyer, as well as Mariah Delacroix. It was an excellent show. It was our Halloween edition, and it's just, it's too bad that we have these shows, and, you know, Karen can't be here, so I always miss Karen when she's not on.
Well, I'm sure she'll be back next week, and I hope she feels better. I'm sure she will, so we'll get to talk with Karen again next week.
Awesome. So, you know... Everybody, thanks again for listening. You know, our national as well as international listeners, you know, we love every last one of you. We like that you guys like the show.
Yeah, and please, just wanted to mention that the listeners should stay tuned for a great show after ours. Right now, we're ending, and Fox City's Paranormal Radio will be up next, so please stay tuned.
Well, thanks for everybody listening. This is Rick and Cheryl with Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Have a good week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.